top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 272, Garbage Pail Kids.
The movie.
It's
got to see the movie, man.
Not to be confused with the 18th century philosophical treatise, Garbage Pail Kids, or the light opera, Garbage Pail Kid.
Yeah. I saw the heavy opera, I don't know.
No. This was very light. Light
spirit. Light and frothy.
Yes. Two phrases when it comes to movies strike fear into my heart. One, inspired by a video game, mm-hmm. popular or otherwise, I'm likely to run for the hills. Two, produced by a company that's not normally associated with movies. In this case, Top. Is that it?
Brand? No, I was going to say
baseball card slash
baseball
chewing gum
card,
manufacturer.
Card. Yeah, man. I mean, Tops. This I was going to say in the history of this podcast, and we've been doing this for a number of years now, getting up to about 300 episodes. This is the first time we have ever discuss a film produced by a chewing gum slash trading card manufacturer. This is a Topps chewing gum production. Now, of course, as a child, I collected everything and anything Topps. I collected baseball cards. I collected hockey cards. I always loved how you got that last card at the back with a piece of gum stuck to it.
Exactly.
So you would take that rigid piece of gum that would just crack the, you know, in a like a piece of glass, and you take it off, and then your poor card was, could have been a Wayne Gretzky rookie, but it was stained forevermore because of that piece of gum. I ate the gum. Did you eat the gum?
I did not, but for some reason I was just obsessed with numbers associated with hockey and baseball. I would memorize, and it extended to, I think, cars too. Mm-hmm. So like Toyota whatever card, and I'd memorize like RPM of a particular model, and I'd memorize how many assists some particular Montreal Canadiens player had, or baseball, what his slugging percentage was, and might have been, I don't know if it was like some Asperger's type thing. I would memorize these useless statistics, and for what? Like, I don't know why, but I was collecting anything and everything related to trading cards and
but
organizing
were you,
them accordingly.
Were you collecting Garbage Pail Kids?
I was not. And this only came across my radar through, obviously, the more popular toy variety that it was lampooning, which would be the Cabbage Patch Kids
of course,
which was a huge, I mean, worldwide
cultural phenomenon in the 80s. Yeah. Parents punching and beating and clawing each other in the aisles of toy stores to try and get one for their
yes.
What would a black son or daughter?
Yeah. What would a Black Friday be without a good stomping riot at a big box retailer to get a toy? Yeah, those were the days.
And you were an avid Cabbage Patch fan. You had a few, right?
I don't want to get too deep into my personal life, but yeah, definitely cousins had them, and they're odd looking dolls, and I don't know why someone took it upon themselves to hold this up for parody. Were they so wholesome that they required being sent up?
First of all,
damned if I know.
I gotta say one thing. Cabbage Patch Kids, growing in the garden, Cabbage Patch Kids, something in the sun.
That's beautiful.
the commercial. It was such a cultural phenomenon. It was such a juggernaut in the, I would say, mid-80s that you had to parody them. And I personally love Garbage Pail Kids. I collected all the cards. It was never a trip to a convenience store for me without coming out with at least a package of Garbage Pail Kids in addition to a package of Wacky Packs. That was another kind of novelty card sticker thing that was very popular in the 80s.
Good God.
Where they would take products. It was kind of like Mad Magazine. They would take products and they would satirize them. Garbage Pail Kids, on the other hand, yeah, I mean, they were meant to be like the Cabbage Patch Kids, but gross. And in the 80s, even now, today, kids love gross. A lot of toys were based upon the fact that they were gross. So I'm thinking about the slime for the Master of the Universe play sets. I'm thinking about Madballs, Boglins, etc. Love them all, had them all, and I adored my Garbage Pail Kids.
Oh, I can just imagine you lording it over your sister or something, and her saying, oh, that's so gross. I can't imagine. It must have started like a bunch of like sibling fights in homes all across North America.
Sibling, but my cousin, who's about 5 years younger, was terrified of the Garbage Pail Kids. Whenever she would come, I feel bad right now, because I mean, now she's a doctor. I mean, you know, she's so beyond this. But at the time, she was probably about...
and yet we're not, so that's
exactly.
Okay.
She was about 4 or 5, and I remember her being at the house, and I would pull out my Garbage Pail Kids and start showing them to her. And she had a really visceral reaction, because some of these cards were rather... I mean, it was all tongue-in-cheek and fun and games, but some of them were a little... some of them were a little more disturbing than others. The thing that was a real badge of honor, because you would bring these cards with you to school and you would show your friends and sometimes you would trade and whatever, is if you were to find, or if they were to make, a Garbage Pail Kid based upon your name. Now, these names were either rhyming or alliterative, right? So they would usually be something along, well, for example, in this movie you got like Valerie Vomit, Wendy Winston, Foul Phil, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I was waiting with bated breath for that one card, something Jeff. And when it finally came out...
Jittery Jeff? Jolton Jeff?
It was kind of disappointing. Huh. It was Junky Jeff.
Oh.
Junky. Yeah.
That's pretty risque.
Well, junky in the sense like into garbage. And I was happy. I was happy that they made a Garbage Pail Kid with my name, but it was probably one of my least favorite Garbage Pail Kids. Now, I don't recall if there was a Chris, but I'm sure there was one.
Crackhead Chris? I don't know.
That was probably a little too extreme for even the Garbage Pail Kids back in the 80s.
It's so bizarre, the toy and related phenomena surrounding trash, like with Oscar the Grouch and hiding out in this Brooklyn alleyway, just seems so beyond, pardon the pun, pale of what you would do. Like, wouldn't that scare kids, like in this weird urban setting, like in the urban jungle? I don't know. Well, I guess it does. I mean, that's the whole point, right?
Right.
These things are scary. Garbage is gross. These things are meant to gross people out. And who knew? Like, I'm first off, I'm a little like tongue-tied here, as your knowledge of Garbage Pail Kids is so incredibly vast. I don't even know what to say.
Well, it's vast, but at the same time, and this is a movie that when it came out in the 1987, this film completely slipped my radar. I didn't even know that it existed until sometime in, let's say, the late 90s, early 2000s. Now, which is weird because as a child, I've never been a big sports fan, but I was always a pop culture / entertainment junkie. So whenever I would get the newspaper, I would always skew the sports section and go straight for the entertainment. And one thing I loved was the Friday paper, because I would pull out the entertainment section and would show me all the adverts for the movies coming out that weekend. Now, there were certain movies. There was a cinema near us that would play these movies that really had no chance in hell of being successful at the box office. And I would always liken it to a movie that would open and close the very same weekend. I think the theater was called Cedar Braid. Anyway, this was a movie that would have been tailor-made to open and close that weekend at Cedar Braid. Just like the movie, well, it kind of had a bit of more of a run. I did see it at Cedar Brain. It did have, it's a massacre called Falling Sins, Born in East L.A.
Mm-hmm.
with Cheech Marin.
Yeah.
What's happening?
Yeah, we just passed April 20th. Yeah.
Yes, indeed, 420. Hmm. But I never saw this ad. I didn't know this movie existed. Maybe I was away in summer camp. That must have been it. And it must have just come and gone in such a blip that me, being the fan of the property that I was, being the collector, I did not have any awareness of this film. Nor did many people, because this film was made for a relatively paltry $1 million.
And it shows.
And it grossed 1.5. So, I mean, when you consider prints and marketing, this thing was a massive flop.
It really has the imprimatur of Hollywood backlot all over it. Even in the first scene where you're introduced to this antique shop from which this Garbage Pail Kids eventually spawn. And this couldn't be more like CW, Fox Network, shitty small town backlot if it tried. And this is a cheap ass looking movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, not much was, it was a quickie, right? I mean, it was just to draw this type of market, hope to do well, tap into a cultural zeitgeist and get out with like, and maybe make a little like Corman-esque profit and get out the back end. Not likely.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you say zeitgeist, I mean, as much as the Garbage Pail Kids were popular, I wouldn't consider them part of the zeitgeist. So, would you say more Cabbage Patch Kids?
Yeah, they're trying to tap into some phenomenon, and it does have that cheeky kind of Mad Magazine. Like, this is something I would have gone to see had I known about it.
I would have too in the 80s if I knew about this. Now, the funny thing is, when I finally discovered this movie, I bought it sight unseen. Well, I mean, I saw the movie, but I hadn't seen the movie. Yeah. I purchased it on DVD, and I gotta tell you, it took me about 3 attempts before I managed to watch it full through. I've since grown to love it. I've seen it numerous times since. But yeah, this is a film that's not easy to get through, not easy to love. When this film begins, a spaceship garbage can is hurtling to Earth.
Of course.
Green goo coming out of the can. And again, I have to return to green goo. This is something, again, that was massive in the 80s, you know? Slime was rampant. Slime was everywhere. Any toy line where they could throw slime into place, be it the real Ghostbusters, be it the Masters of the Universe.
Oh, yeah, and very young, Alanis Morissette.
I was going to say.
On that crappy Canadian show.
Getting, you can't do that on television.
Yeah.
Became quite popular in the States as well.
Oh, yeah. I did not know that. And yeah. When someone misstepped or did something, they would get slimed. I believe in front of a high school locker or what was it?
Something they said would always be the impetus.
Some trigger word.
For slime, yeah. People were getting dumped with slime all over the place in the 80s and early 90s. It was Slime-a-palooza back then.
One of our mutual favorites, Slime City, came out in 1988 to really further exploit that wonderful feeling.
Mm-hmm. So as this film begins, we have a bit of mayhem in the sense that we have our lead character by the name of Dodger, and he's running away from some bullies. Now, Dodger is
like
a familiar
the artful Dodger, like Charles Dickens?
Well, he wasn't so artful, but he was played by Mackenzie Astin, who is the son of Patty Duke and John Astin. Astin, of course, the patriarch of the Addams family in the original series, mm-hmm. who played Gomez Adams, half-brother of... did I say Sean Astin or John Astin?
I'm not sure. John, I believe.
John, right, because Sean Astin is his half-brother. And Mackenzie was smack dab in his 3-year stint on The Facts of Life. He joined the cast in 85, stayed on until 88, and this is when The Facts of Life were all about you. You don't get it, do you?
Is that their catchphrase? I confess, I watched it every day, and I don't know what you're talking
it's
about.
It's a theme song, man. The Facts of Life are all about you.
Oh, I see. Okay. I admit the premise to a lot of these shows was really lost on me, particularly this one. Mm. A bunch of girls living above a store. Was it a boarding school?
I didn't understand any of it.
The
Facts of Life morphed in its... It started off as a spinoff of Different Strokes, right? And you had...
With Charlotte Ray.
Charlotte Ray.
Connecting tissue.
She went from being a housekeeper for the Drummonds to being the house mother of a boarding school. And then ultimately, yes, they ended up owning the store. I can't remember the name of the store. I think it was called Over the Edge or something, but it was kind of like a novelty store, like a Spencer's Gifts, perhaps, or in Canada, we had something called the It Store, which was our own equivalent. Really cool store. And I don't recall what Mackenzie Astin's character, what his relationship it was. Was he adopted? Was he a neighbor? I don't know. George Clooney was appearing on the show at the time.
He did indeed. Yeah.
This was like the golden years of The Facts of Life. So, yeah, there's good old Mackenzie Astin running away from these bullies, one of whom, the head bully, if you would say, somebody by the name of Juice, who alternately look like somebody that stepped right off the set of Miami Vice,
yeah,
or a poor man's version of Richard Grieco.
Yeah, for sure. I got to confess, when I first heard juice, I thought they said Jews. I thought, oh man, this is really anti-Semitic. I don't know what to make of this. And then my second thought was...
I was this close to having a spit take.
My second thought was, like, there are a lot of adults wailing on children in this movie. This is really beyond what I expected. And young Dodger finds himself the victim of a park mugging with these like classic quintessential 80s villains straight out of Warriors.
Unable to dodge his assailants.
Yeah.
Not much of a dodger him.
No, and he's left face down in the mud and has to pick himself up, and he's embarrassed and humiliated. And what's weird about one of these like quintessential 80s gangs, of course, clad in leather was the style of the time, but you don't really associate like women folk with gangster lifestyles. Like, they all always were gender integrated back in the
80s.
Yes,
they were,
indeed. And the women you expect better of women, frankly.
Well, the women were just as sadistic as the men many times in these gangs. So good on that, you know, for gender equality.
Yeah, very true. And I thought, oh my God, where is this movie taking me? And why is a young child being beaten up like right in the first five minutes? And we find out why. He doesn't even look old enough to be legally able to be employed anywhere.
Okay.
He must be maybe 11, and yet he works in Mancini's, this antique shop run by this like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, kind of a effete British character.
By the name of Captain Mancini.
Yeah, which is fantastic. I mean, you were a amateur magician. That sounds very magical as a name. Captain Mancini. He would have a show in Vegas or maybe Branson, Missouri. And for whatever reason, the gang, I guess, somehow follows him to this store as well, and he has to fend them off and solicit philosophical deep insights from his mentor
indeed,
in this very odd, setup that I didn't know where this movie was going. Where it does go is he has among his trinkets and tchotchkes a garbage pail, and
garbage pail that we saw hurling to earth at the end of the movie ends up in Mancini's antique store where Dodger works. I should mention, of course, that Captain Mancini, played by Anthony Newley, somebody who is no more as a songwriter, I think, but he did appear in movies. His most notable credit was the original Dr. Doolittle.
Yes.
Not the Eddie Murphy version, but the...
Yeah. Yeah, I could see similarities there, and he's got sort of a Garden of Eden style approach to this trash can. So they do not be tempted
Garden
by
of Eden
this trash
slash Pandora's
can.
Box, which you likened it to at one point. Yep.
Yeah, as well. And okay, do not touch it. And of course, through, I don't even remember what happened, but it gets touched.
Of course it does.
Of course. And what emerges therein is the title characters and setting off a wonderful sequence of events, and it becomes like, once you open Pandora's box, and I believe Pandora was the daughter of Zeus, I don't know, my mythology is a little bit rusty, these things have to be pushed back inside, or else, whatever, genie's out of the bottle. What can you do? These things are malevolent, farting, drooling, slime emitting, disgusting, revolting, ugly characters.
Toe chomping.
Yeah.
In the case of the alligator. Yeah.
Yeah. Very. Yeah. That was the character that threw me the most. Because
some of the Garbage Pail Kids were anthropomorphic. Sort of, they were given animal faces and so on. Mm-hmm. So that's accurate.
But this one was, I guess, head of an alligator, body of a human, like almost like an Egyptian god.
Yeah.
Forget his name, but he has a weird foot fetish, and where he's into biting toes. And I thought, like, this was so tonally out there that I thought, like, the sexual undertones were odd for what is ostensibly a kid movie. And he's like salivating at the prospect of seeing people's feet. And I thought, was this not picked up on by focus groups? Like, as they were testing this movie, like, is this not odd?
Honestly,
or were they just had kids in there? Like,
I think they just farted this thing onto the theaters for a weekend. There was no focus groups. There was no testing. They're like, we have a turd. Let's get it out there. See how much money we can get.
Okay. Well, you say we have a turd. And it's interesting because when various critics claim, and this is a bold claim, that this is one of the worst movies ever made, which is completely erroneous.
Completely erroneous.
You can't, like, if you can watch something from frame to frame and be consistently entertained in a way that you're almost flabbergasted by how incredibly wrong-headed and misguided it is. I'm mm-hmm. looking at you, Battlefield Earth, which we you know, made no bones about our mutual love of. This one is entertaining beyond all expectation. Well, I was just riveted by it. Like, this is a mess, but I was on board.
Right? Well, it's interesting you say that, because it's not so much bad as it is misguided. And when I say misguided, this is a film... The Garbage Pail Kids just very difficult to translate to live action. Incidentally, there was a very, very short-lived Garbage Pail Kids cartoon that aired in the tail end of the 80s, but this is something, again, I don't think aired in Canada because I never heard it. But yeah, I mean, when you see them rendered in illustrated form on a card or a sticker, you know, they look sort of horrific and gross but kind of cute. But when you see them rendered in live action, and they're all, you know, diminutive, many of them were, you know, there were, of course, little people actors playing them with these massive heads and whatnot. And incidentally, the special effects, the costumes of the Garbage Pail Kids were designed by the great and unfortunately late Jean-Carl Buchler, who we discussed not that long ago. What was that film he directed? Was it Demon something or other? With the art school and stuff, and there was the Jeffrey Combs movie.
Oh, yes. He directed that. The only thing that's springing to mind is Demon C, the 1977 movie, but it's not that. Oh, we should know, because...
But Buchler, I mean, the man was... effects was extraordinaire, and he directed a lot of fun movies as well. And this one, it's when production was set to begin, the heads weren't working. So if you notice, when we first meet... There are seven of them. So what is that? That's not a quintet. That's a...
Septet.
Yeah. When we first meet our septet of GPKs.
Wonderful.
Yep. Their heads don't move. I mean, their heads move, but when they talk, their mouths don't move. And the director, and again, his name escapes me at the moment, decided, you know what? Let's just start filming. Tight schedule. And the effects man will continue tinkering on these things. Hey. And as the film progresses, the effects will get better. And yes, as the film does move on, their mouths do go up and down, but it's more like a flappy sort of thing, like South Park, Terrence and Phillip, right? There's no enunciation whatsoever with the lips, or, you know, no fricatives or anything
God. Well, it does give it a certain je ne sais quoi, like a certain odd creepiness to it. Mm. Almost like a Dr. Fives band kind of odd, like... dissociative effect with these creatures that in whom you're supposed to be invested, but they are a little bit bug-eyed and a little odd.
A little bit.
Well, I was thinking for a movie as tonally off as this, it's not even these creatures that is what's most off. In the first scene, I believe this Manzini hooks up Dodger with a dashiki that he brought back from Africa, mm-hmm. and I was like, why is this kid wearing a dashiki? It's so odd.
Well, he was wearing dashiki because when he got his beat down, he was, was that when they threw him in the sewers?
And he was covered in muck, but it's just like, you couldn't get away with that now. It would be probably deemed cultural appropriation. But I thought, like, why is this kid wearing this, like, African regal garb? And I thought this, but that wasn't even, like, in
could
the top.
Could have been worse, man. They could have given him a sari or something.
Yeah, it's true. Or a toga. Who's sari now? But I thought that was just really wild. Mm-hmm. And but it's not these creatures that are antagonists. They're really heroic, because what happens is they, I guess, Manzini and company and the kid enlist them to help them not only fend off the bullies, but also help Dodger help his love interest launch a fashion boutique line, which is, you know, funny that we're talking fashion again on the podcast.
You know, you talk about malevolence and Manzini, who you get a sense has been around for a while. Like, he's a bit of a mystical figure. He's a bit of a wizard.
He's a necromancer.
He knows about these kids, these Garbage Pail Kids, and he knows that the havoc that they can create, and he wants them to stay in the garbage can where they're not liable to cause any sort of mayhem. But of course, as is par for the course, they're gonna get out. Now, Dodger does have a crush on one of his antagonists, on a member of the gang.
As did I. She's lovely. And I guess a telenovela is that the one?
Katie Barbary?
She's in Mexican soap operas, but she was just fantastic.
It's true. I was just very quickly looking up on IMDb, and I saw a lot of foreign language titles. So she was
And I think she's from the Bronx or something. And
she was a terrible actress.
Oh, she is, but she cuts a certain, you know, slim, attractive 80s figure with her like ringlets of hair and her like vaguely athletic body. It's one of these weird coming of age.
That was probably the most romantic description I've ever heard of anything. Those ringlets of hair and her vaguely athletic body.
Well, I could wax poetic a little more, but I thought the tension sexually between her and the kid were very odd too. Mm-hmm. And it's not. Maybe it is something you kind of see maybe in the babysitter kind of crush dynamic they have, which was odd, and it just, especially with him being so short and so young, even though there's probably only 3 years between them, but
believe it or not, it
seemed like an eternity.
I'm gonna blow your mind right now. Mackenzie Astin, Katie Barbary, 1 year age gap. She was 1 year older than him, even though she was about double his height, and they were even dating in real life.
Ew.
They broke up during the course of the filming, but they were actually an item. I know, like in the movie.
It looks disturbing. It really is wrong.
Because he looks all about 11 or 12, and she looks like, you know, 17, 18, what have you. But yeah, they were an item in real life.
And I guess she starts to feel somewhat sorry for him as her fellow gang members are giving him beatdowns and threatening him and whatever, and she has an associated clothing line, and with which,
well, it's more of like a clandestine clothing operation where she'll go to nightclubs,
it's like a pop-up shop in
or back in the day when, you know, you would be like walking through a parking lot and somebody like, hey man, you want some speakers?
But have you ever bought clothing out of the back of someone's trunk?
I almost bought speakers once from the back of the trunk, but I can say without any moment's hesitation that I have never bought an article of clothing out of the back of someone's trunk. She was never selling the shirt off her own back, for God's sake.
Yeah, literally. Well, I would never go to someone's trunk, so I always think of that, you know, joke. How does this chloroform smell to you? You know, like, I would never, like, it seems weirdly, I mean, there's the cliche again of the, yeah, the guy with the van who's selling stolen merch in from his trunk. So yeah, it's kind of creepy. But the people, her target demographic, my God, do they ever love her? And these things couldn't look any worse. They're just crappy shirts, and they were pawing at her like she was like the UN dropping off food supplies to like some, like, you know, drought-ridden country. They were like swarming this
analogy,
woman.
And yet it's so right. I love it, man.
They were swarming her. Like, no brand has this kind of pull. And not that I know of. And yeah, they couldn't sell the stuff quickly enough, and Dodger and helps her out, and it becomes like a, yeah, sales associate unloading this stuff at the nightclub.
Because the he enlists the help of the GPKs, the Garbage Pail Kids, to help him design these clothing.
Yeah, to curry favor with her. He starts to come up with his own line to help her.
Yeah, now you say that she sort of felt sorry for him. And yeah, I do feel there was a tinge of sympathy. But at the same time, she was not a sympathetic character. I think everything she did was self-serving. I don't feel like she really ever had any real affection for poor Dodger. So she was self-serving, and I think kind of a bitch, actually. And even watching the movie, I'm like, Dodger, she may look twice her age, man. She may cut a lice of them 80s athletic figure, but you could do a lot better. All the same, you know, sometimes when one is in love, one often overlooks some very glaring red flags, and she had a lot of red flags. Not the least of which is that she's a charter member of a gang that kicks this guy's ass on a daily basis, pretty much putting into a coma, if not for like timely interventions of either Captain Manzini or the Garbage Pail Kids.
A charter member. It sounds like the Hell's Angels. Well, she would be, you know, surely more than capable of being able to sew the patch into her into her leather jacket or whatever. I mean, she is unsympathetic because she does take credit for the fashion designs done by the GPKs, who are working in a kind of a, well, it is a kind of a under sweatshop conditions, you know, to pump out this merchandise, which is like a real life analog to, you know, the fashion industry today, really. So, but it was kind of funny, yeah. And she's highlighting their line in her collection and debuting it, and not, you know, feeling any bones about just ripping them off until questioned about it.
And that was, by the way, that was one of the highlights of the movie. When they are slaving away to make these outfits to satiate this incredible demand for I don't know what the label was called at this point. And
Tangerine,
Tangerine, exactly. And when they break out into song and dance, which again was pretty much par for the course in any kids movie in the 80s, there was always some sort of musical number, whether it be live action, whether it be a cartoon. Of course, Disney movies always, but this was before like Disney soundtracks became a juggernaut. So this was not like Let It Go from Frozen or like A Whole New World or Beauty and the Beast or...
That god-awful Elton John thing.
I was going to say, Can You Feel Love Tonight or Hakuna Matata? I mean, you know, so, but yeah, you would have your mandatory musical number, and I'm kind of remembering this from memory, but it's We Can Do Anything by Working With Each Other. La, 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 la.
Nice, message.
We can do anything by working with each other. Repeat about 45 times over, but yeah. Fantastic. Phenomenal. And
probably just to pad the running time, because there's really not much to this once you have, I guess...
Well, dude, first of all, okay, you're saying there's not much to this. You have an anthropomorphic alligator that has a foot fetish. You have a character named Wendy Winston who... Or was it Wendy Winston? Who was the one that blew the massive farts all the time?
I don't know. Well, one of them looked like Kenan Thompson from Saturday Night Live, which is, I'm embarrassed to say, and I promise that's not racist, but
you had somebody
just so awful.
Whose face was it was completely covered by acne zits. That was, I believe, Nat Nerd. You had somebody, Valerie Vomit, who couldn't keep the uptuck in. I mean, these were gross characters, and yet lovable.
And yet lovable.
But ultimately, the thing about this movie, which I found quite endearing, is that there is a good message to it. And the message is that it's not what's external that makes you beautiful or attractive. It's what's internal. Because there is a theme in this movie where people that are too ugly are being rounded up and sent to the state home for the ugly. So this is a society where people that are deemed unattractive are rounded up, locked up. And that was one of the worries for the Garbage Pail Kids, is that if they enter the real world, they too are going to be rounded up, locked up, put in... It was basically like these two, like almost like dog catchers, and they'd be thrown into what was basically kennels for ugly people. And there you had people that were considered to be too bald, too weird, too gross, even too fat. And that was good old St. Nick, Santa Claus. So ultimately, and the thing about Tangerine, sure, she may have been attractive externally, but internally she was horrible. Whereas the Garbage Pail Kids may have been somewhat gross and disgusting on the exterior, but in the interior, they had a really good heart. They really cherished the bonds of friendship, not just amongst each other, but also with their new friend Dodger, and so on. So despite the grossness, despite the plethora of mucus, bodily fluids, vomit, flatulence, and on, this is not a film bereft of heart. There is heart. So why somebody would call this one of the worst films ever made, I have no idea.
I agree. You'd be hard-pressed to find a message in Manos, The Hands of Fate. Sure, like to what extent people...
Oh, there's a message there.
Yeah,
don't turn off. Don't drop acid before you film your scenes, like poor Torgo.
That's true. That's true.
Don't wear this gigantic robe with massive handprints on it when your name means hands in Spanish.
No, I wholeheartedly agree. I quite like that message that we're all the same at heart. We all bleed red. To what extent?
Well, in the case of the Garbage Pail Kids, we never saw green. They probably bleed green too, but that's okay.
To what extent maybe there's been an uptick in the adoption of this message? Who knows? As it seems like plastic surgery is like proliferating at an incredible rate, and you probably don't even need to round up ugly people, because people become shut-ins if they're not deemed conventionally attractive. So yeah, I thought that was really interesting. And and Dodger always emphasized that too, because during the fashion show, when they emerge to a bunch of gasps about how repellent they are by the onlookers, he says, wait, these guys are my friends. They're just like you and I. I thought, yeah, that was really quite, you know, nice and decent and touching.
Yeah, as much as and this is a quote from the movie, the Garbage Pail Kids would call regular people normies, as much as the normies were scared of the Garbage Pail Kids, the Garbage Pail Kids were scared of the normies, because they too were craving love and acceptance and whatnot that, you know, belied their, I guess you would say, horrific exterior. Yeah. Although really, I mean, as the film
there's
progresses.
There's only one that's really horrific.
Yeah.
Maybe. The acne-addled one, I'm not sure.
Yeah, they're cute. As the film progresses, they're cute. They're a lot more horrific looking than they actually did in illustrated form in the cards. But they're not without their charms. They're cute.
And the coda emphasizes the distinction between ugly on the inside and outside when Dodger finally sees the light and says this about his love interest, Tangerine. I used to think you were pretty, but I don't anymore.
Exactly.
When he finds out about her thieving ways and everything. So
you got it, yep. So is this the time in the podcast we talk about what we learn?
Oh, I learned that... caveat, I've not seen, and what I think is probably an unfair to the deceased, very damning portrayal of Michael Jackson in the new Netflix documentary, but Michael Jackson's jacket, my God, was that a cultural phenomenon. And in here, Hot Threads, as they refer to, and Dodger's wearing this jacket right out of Thriller, or that era of MJ in 87, 89, when he was at the peak of his form, and I thought, man, this was all over the place.
I never owned a Michael Jackson jacket. I wanted one so bad, one of those summer jackets, but I did own a glove.
Nice.
I had a single sequin glove, officially authorized by MJ, so that was pretty cool.
I won't. Okay, I was going to...
I had a Bubbles the Chimp stuffed animal. At one point, they actually put out a line of toys based around Michael Jackson's menagerie of animals, of pets.
Oh,
and of course, his the most famous one was Bubbles. And my mother must sponsor me for my birthday or something. I had a Bubbles the Chimp plush doll. My sister was given one. I believe it was a giraffe of some sort. I don't recall the name.
There's no quicker route to bankruptcy as an A-list celebrity than investing in exotic pets. That will be your downfall. You can always cut your entourage down to size from, let's say, 100 to 10. But my God, like tigers that, you know, Mike Tyson had on his estate. It's just, it's not good.
Slash is quite the avid collector of exotic reptiles, snakes, and whatnot.
That's true, but they come pretty cheap. Put him in, in a greenhouse in the backyard.
I'd like to ask Sigmund and Roy what their opinions are about owning large...
Siegfried and Roy? Is that a Freudian slip, literally? No, that's very good.
There you go.
Oh, my God. Poor Siegfried and Roy. We'll never get to see their act in Vegas.
I saw the tigers.
Really?
Yes.
They were touring separately?
No. When I was in Vegas, when I was 15 years old, I was staying at the Mirage Hotel, and that's where Siegfried and Roy had their residency. And although we did not see the show, I wanted to see the show, but it was prohibitively expensive. In the Mirage, they actually had a viewing area where you could see those white tigers. And I believe that one of them was the guilty offender, the one that mauled poor Siegfried. Was it Siegfried or Roy that got mauled?
I can't recall. Jeez, I would have thought you could have showcased these animals in... a mall. No, that's just my bad pun there, but anyway, never mind. You look confused.
Mally Mall or Molly Mall? Is it like a hip-hop artist of today? I don't know, man.
Never mind. I also learned that, getting back to my jacket point, as they were getting closer, although it's purely in a platonic sense, at least on her part, of course, she coos, "Ooh, that jacket makes you look so much older." And again, she's just playing him because... despite, you know, and I'm still rattled by their real life age disparity, she would not have anything to do with them, as she being a foot and a half taller, and they looked like adult and child. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the jacket makes you look older, and that's something any kid growing up can relate to, really, is like unrequited teen lust of a babysitter. I mean, that's a universal theme, and even though he wasn't her charge, like that kind of dynamic was really well played out, and it was kind of charming. And so when she shot him down, I felt bad for her.
Yeah. So ultimately, there's a lot of charming elements to this movie. Does it deserve the derision it's getting, or it has gotten, because it has now become a bit of a cult classic? Although it is rated very, very low, 2.7 on IMDb. Certainly not. Now, what did I learn? Well, at one point, the Garbage Pail Kids want to get out of the confines of Mancini's, and they want to go out into the world at large, and they want to see a movie. So, of course, they have to disguise themselves. And they elect to disguise themselves in one of the most shop-worn disguises and ineffective disguises in history. The good old ubiquitous tan trench coat. What is it about a trench coat that makes people...
makes you give you a cloak of invisibility?
Yeah,
or I don't
like,
know what. Like,
if I walked out tomorrow wearing a trench coat and sunglasses, maybe even a fedora. Would I be able to walk by you unrecognized?
If anything, quite the opposite. But it's that's a cultural phenomenon from like the peep show circuit, or the grindhouse crowd would be donning that, which is bizarre.
And it also reminds me of the live action adaptation, the very first one of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, where I believe it was Raphael who wanted to escape the sewers, go see a movie, and I believe the movie actually saw was Critters, and he too donned that.
Yeah, and lampooned on the Family Guy, where you would put someone on your shoulders and then put a long trench coat on in order to, depict yourself as being taller and hence older. And then they have this protracted gag where the person who's vetting said person was also in said getup, which I thought was pretty funny. But yeah, another thing you learned.
Another stock scene, which kind of took a little twist, but you see this a lot in movies, is characters entering either inadvertently or advertently, is that a word? Anyway, a tough biker bar. And in this case, the moniker of the bar is actually the toughest bar in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I don't know who made that determination. Is there some sort of like...
Oh, you want to challenge them on it?
...governing body or something that goes around the bars and says, okay, you're tough, you're just not tough enough. We'll put you at number 6 on the list. This was the toughest bar in the world. And this scene cried for one of the horriest cliches in cinema. So many movies, from Terminator to like the worst of the worst, are guilty of this. When a character walks into a bar and you get, da 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 da, I can't even do the riff.
No, Bad to the Bone by George Thorogood. And I was gonna, and everyone turns to see the newcomer. When in reality, if you're sitting in a bar, you'd just be talking to your friends, drinking, and never would. If the Pope walked in, no one would turn to look.
You would still hear as the Pope walked in. The day it was born.
And speaking of hoary cliches, there's the time-honored bar fight, grab the guy by the lapels and throw him the length of the bar, which again, I've never understood. Like, how wet would the bar top have to be to eliminate all sorts of friction to have the guy slide like 10 to 15 feet? It's impossible physically to do it.
I know.
And yet this one featured that. That was great. I knew you'd bring that one up.
My only hypothesis for the lack of Bat to the Bone was lack of a budget. being able to pay George Thorogood his licensing fees, which I believe is basically the sole source of George Thorogood's income. Because other than that, another god-awful song about what? One bourbon, one whiskey, one beer.
Yeah, the guy, we don't want to get on the George Thorogood tangent, but he owes his entire...
George thoroughly bad.
Yeah, he's terrible. He owes his entire career to the late, great John Lee Hooker, whose music he covered and did so very badly as well. I think similarly about the shitty, very shitty ZZ Top, where you just take the same 3-chord riffs that were prevalent in the 50s and 60s and then just adopt them for maybe like a wider rock audience and don't do anything new with them. So, ZZ Top had a few more good songs.
They had, Sharp Dress aesthetic and whatnot, and they had some really good videos. In the heyday of MTV.
A lot of hot rods, a lot of hot chicks.
Yep. A lot of legs, women with legs and knew how to use them.
Yeah.
I don't know how to use legs. I mean,
I've known since I was maybe 2.
Yeah.
I don't know. You have to check
if you
with my
can
parents.
Walk, you know how to use your legs.
Exactly.
Anyway, I think at that point, it's a good point. This is a good point to give
dispense
our star
dispense with what we've learned. Yeah, star rating. I'm going to give this a solid 3.
I was
grinning from ear to ear. I was just loving how just ridiculous this was. Like, there was a scene where the gangsters have chased Dodger into his place of work, and he feigns them by using, of all things, a basketball. And he dekes one of them out, and he tries to, like, fake that he's going to throw the ball in their face, and then the guy falls, and I'm like, who gives a crap about a basketball? If a bunch of gangsters were coming toward me, I would just turn tail and run. There's no kind of decoy. I'm going to producing some sort of, ball. But I thought that was really weird. Still, I was just endlessly, I didn't know what they would come up with. The animatronics were hilarious, and they were stilted and bad, and yet that added to the charm, as they were very boxy and very stock and mechanical. I guess they were literally mechanical, but in the way they were operated, and I thought that kind of added a certain cheesy charm to the proceedings. So 3, an honest to God 3 for me.
And what I'm going to say before I get my star rating, Chris, is again, we can do anything by working with each other. Take it. La, 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 la. Yeah, no, it's funny. I mean, like I said before, my first two attempts at watching this film were not successful. This is way back when. But when I finally got on board for my third viewing and each subsequent viewing, it just grows and grows in charm each and every time. In fact, it kind of reminds me in some ways of that wonderful movie Freaked with Alex Winter from Bill and Ted. Didn't I do that movie one time?
No, but aren't they rebooting Bill and Ted?
Well, they're not rebooting it. They're making a sequel.
Yeah, with the original principals, which is funny because the one guy has to be sitting by his phone after having done nothing for the interceding 30 years. I mean, but, you know, Keanu is on board.
You got it. And unfortunately, the late, great George Carlin will not be participating because of that, and that's a bit of a shame, but I'm totally psyched for that one. So... yeah, Garbage Pail Kids. I'm going to give this one... let's do it. I was going to give it 3.5, but I'm going to bump it up just a wee bit more to 3.75. I can't... you know, 4 stars for Garbage Pail Kids.
No.
I you would have to take away my any credentials I have. If I even have credentials as a film reviewer.
But critical faculties at that point have been dulled to the point where we would have to stop this podcast. But
three quarters for me.
Yeah, and hopefully you listeners have had an excellent adventure listening to us on the podcast here as we creep toward that magical 300 mark. I don't know what we're going to do to commemorate that auspicious occasion. Probably nothing. We'll probably grab some 80s wrestling themed movie or something and only make reference to it tangentially. But you never know. Maybe we will do our top 10 favorite moments from the preceding 3 years of wonderful podcasting activities.
Going on 5, I think, now.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Time flies when you're not having much fun. We're having a great time.
No.
I think what I'm going to do, as I press stop and record, is I'm going to go on eBay and see if I can repurchase all my Garbage Pail Kids cards. I wish I could. It would probably be...
cost you a small fortune.
It's gone up considerably in value.
But
I would like to hunt down, like I said, at least for myself... Chunky Jeff, and there's got to be a crisp one out there. I'm sure one of our listeners can fill us in.
Keep an eye out for that, and keep an eye out for new episodes of the podcast uploaded for your listening pleasure every Friday, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.